Mr. Henkel?
I'm Mr. Johnson. May it please the Court, Your Honor.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Leif Johnson. I'm for the United States.
Got it. Okay, go ahead.
An affirmative appeal. The district court in this case, and I will try to reserve a little time if possible, the district court in this case suppressed evidence gathered in a traffic stop on the
crew. By the way, this case is a little more complicated than it seemed, and we might give you some extra time, so don't worry too much about the time. Go ahead.
Thank you. The district court here suppressed evidence gathered in a traffic stop on the Crow Reservation, remote highway in the Crow Reservation in February, late at night, on the grounds that the tribal officer in this case was acting without authority to detain a non-Indian person for something less than an obvious violation of law.
I want to understand. I want to make sure I understand the record correctly in this case. The district court suppressed solely on the basis of the ICRA, Indian Civil Rights Act violation, without regard to finding whether there was a Fourth Amendment violation.
Right.
So the essential issue in this case for me is whether the exclusionary rule applies to ICRA violations. What's the case law on that?
Your Honor, in the Becerra-Garcia case, this court described that the parameters of Fourth Amendment jurisprudence are essentially the same as ICRA on search and seizure.
Including the exclusionary rule.
Well, that's
what my understanding is you've conceded that. I mean, I was not entirely sure whether a case law was, but on that narrow point, and Judge Hurwitz may be asking something else, which I'm going to get to.
But keep going.
But on the question of if the problem was that there was no probable cause for the search, whoever did it, you are not arguing that ICRA does not include an exclusionary rule.
We have not made that argument, Your Honor.
But now I'm asking a narrower question, I think. Let's assume ICRA said, for example, no tribal police officer may ever arrest anybody on the reservation except a native. I know it doesn't say that, but let's assume that it did. And a tribal police officer with lots of probable cause arrested someone. Would we exclude the fruits of that search, of a consequent search, perfectly legal under the Fourth Amendment, because there was a violation of ICRA?
No.
Okay, now I'm trying to find the case law that makes that distinction.
Well, I think so this relates to our second issue, which is under Becerra-Garcia, a tribal officer acting outside of his authority under tribal law.
All right, but this isn't under tribal law. This, as I understand it, is under he may have authority under tribal law, but the problem is that he doesn't have authority under federal law with regard to this place. So, I mean, I found your briefs really not very helpful because you were arguing a bunch of things that don't work, like that, because this person, the problem here isn't what tribal law is. The problem here is what federal Indian law is, i.e., this guy under federal law doesn't have jurisdiction to, in some sense, over this state highway after the Supreme Court case law. And then you're arguing the old case, which was before the Supreme Court cases, as to the state highway. But we know that he doesn't have jurisdiction under the state highway broadly, although he does apparently to stop somebody to find out whether he's an Indian, and to detain him on some standard. As to whether for authorized people to come. So we should stick to what the law is now as opposed to 30 years ago.
So let me rephrase my question because I
– Very well.
Let's assume here we have a violation of ICRA.
Yes.
But no violation of the Fourth Amendment. What case tells me that we should not suppress the fruits of the search in that circumstance?
Well, I think the best case would be to look at the sort of extraterritorial search case that we submitted in our 28J letter. If you look at Ryan, there was a Park Service officer who made an arrest outside of the
– So he lacked authority to do so.
And he did. And there was a federal regulation.
Federal law.
Under federal regulatory law, he lacked authority to make the stop, and yet he made the stop, and the court – and that was the First Circuit, basically said, look, the same rules that have been applied with regard to state law and tribal law in Becerra-Garcia and in some of the cases dealing with state law are applicable in the federal context.
I think that is a good case for you. I want to ask you one question about it. It involved regulations.
Yes.
Does it make a difference that this involves a statute decided by implemented by Congress? In other words, Congress said, tribal officers, as a matter of federal law, not tribal law, you won't be allowed to do certain things. How do we enforce Congress's will if we don't exclude the fruits of the search?
Well, we think that the pursuant to the Schmuck decision, which the Supreme Court acknowledged in Strait, in footnote 11 of Strait, we think that the tribal officer does have authority.
No, and I've asked you to assume that he didn't. I understand that one of your arguments is this was a perfectly okay search under ICRA.
That he had authority to
But I'm asking you to assume that it was not.
Okay.
Assume that we affirmed the district judge on that basis, the district judge's holding that this violated the Indian Civil Rights Act. Is there no consequence for violating the Indian Civil Rights Act under your view in a criminal case?
We think the consequence comes under the Fourth Amendment procedures. That ought to be a consequence.
ICRA itself doesn't have this limitation, right? I understand it, it's judge-made law with regard to the reach of Indian authority.
Yes.
All ICRA has is a parallel to the Fourth Amendment.
Yes.
And you agree that insofar as it's a parallel to the Fourth Amendment, the exclusionary rule does apply.
Yes.
So the real question is whether, and I still have a version of Judge Hurwitz's question. As I understand your basic argument, if this person, assuming that this person in fact did not have authority to do what he did, there is no way to enforce that. Is that your argument? Because we know you can't bring a 1983 case or anything like it. And I don't think you could bring a habeas, so what could you do?
Well, I mean, you could certainly sue the tribal officer under the Federal Tort Claims Act if he's acting as an officer under Section 638 and the tribe has law enforcement powers granted through a 638 contract, then.
But it doesn't.
Its officers are
liable. But there's
liable.
No authority, no indication that it does. I mean, as far as I can tell, if it struck me that the tribe here kept insisting that it had this authority, and at least in my view, it appears it doesn't, or at least it doesn't have the authority as broad as it claims to have the authority, but there seems to be no way to litigate that.
Well, we think the way it's litigated in any case like this has to do with reasonableness. And I want to get back.
So your answer is no. If the person's just the wrong person and he has no authority to do this, too bad.
For the purposes of the search and seizure, as to whether the evidence is usable in this case, the Fourth Amendment procedures are the protection that's afforded by the law.
Let me ask the question differently. Are you arguing that the exclusionary rule under ICRA is limited to Fourth Amendment violations?
Yes. And if you look at so in Becerra-Garcia, the court cited Elkins and a number of other cases having to do with state law violations. But in those cases, the court applied a rule that we think should apply here, which is, was the search reasonable if a federal officer had conducted it?
And I want to go back to, I don't understand how it is you think this stop was, and an extended stop was reasonable in the first place.
Your Honor,
did the officer have authority once he realized this was a non-Indian?
Those are two questions. Our position is that the court should have applied the Fourth Amendment analysis from the beginning. It didn't. It applied it created this obviousness test from a roadblock case, which we think is appropriate in the roadblock scenario because.
That case, the distinction between a roadblock and a traffic stop and whatever this was, a welfare stop, are important at the front end, i.e., the stopping to begin with. But I don't see why it's any different, and the case doesn't say it's different with regard to what the authority of the tribal officer is once you realize that it's a non-Indian.
Well, I think Bressy did say it's different. I mean, Bressy set out...
No, it doesn't say it's different. Where does it say
Bressy,
that?
At page 895, set out Ortiz Barraza and Schmuck as the rules for the ordinary case. And it distinguished
and it said,
the ordinary
it
case.
It said, you use the word apparent, and your argument seems to be that apparent is different than obvious. And apparent isn't different than obvious. They're both exactly, if you look up in Roget's thesaurus, you will find out they mean the same thing.
The court in Bressy was not intending to set a new rule for the ordinary case. It was distinguishing the ordinary case. And by the way, the Bressy decision had nothing to do with the reasonableness of the stop. And that's where we get into Becerra Garcia and those questions. But if we get back to the tribal authority matter, Bressy set out the general rule from Ortiz and from Schmuck. And the reference to Schmuck is really important here because the overarching error in the district court's reasoning was that without the power to exclude on a public highway, the tribe really has no power to detain someone for anything other than an obvious violation. And number one, we have a couple problems with that. Number one, there doesn't seem to be any reason why an officer would gain jurisdiction for an obvious violation and not for something else. But more importantly, the Schmuck case dealt directly with that issue because in that case, the Highway Patrol objected to the fact that the Washington tribe was exercising jurisdiction on a public highway, and the very issue came up there.
It was before the relevant Supreme Court case, straight, right?
Well,
on that issue.
But on that issue, the Durrell case, the court said there's a question as to whether the court has a right to exclude, and the court said there are other powers, there are other inherent sovereign powers that give the tribe the right to detain on a public highway, consistent with Ortiz Barraza, even though that case was predicated on the issue of exclusion.
There's no doubt here that the tribal officer has the ability to walk up to the car and do the initial stuff. The question is whether the tribal officer may detain and search under the conditions of this case. And so I'm not sure that those cases are helpful to me, are they?
Well, so they're helpful because that is the Fourth Amendment. So the officer needs to have authority to proceed. And in this case, we think he does under Schmuck, which, by the way, Washington State case, and it was cited with approval in footnote 11 of the Strait decision. And the Strait decision, which is the relevant authority on exclusion, said we do not here question the ability of tribal officers to stop and detain
and transfer, and no one here is questioning that either. The question is what happens after he stopped and detained him, and then found out he was a non-Indian. What then? And you, throughout your brief, are arguing that there is then a right to investigate, and I don't know where you're getting that from.
So, I'm getting that from Ortiz Barraza, which was cited in Bressy, which is there is the without the authority to
investigate. It would be if it wasn't on a state highway, but it is on a state highway.
Well, and it was in Ortiz Barraza as well, and in
yes,
Schmuck.
And they were wrong about the one thing that Ortiz Barraza we know is wrong about is that it doesn't that the fact that it's a state highway doesn't affect the authority in general of the tribe over that part of the reservation, and that we know is wrong.
Well, we don't know that's wrong because Schmuck dealt with that, as I was explaining. Schmuck states that there are other sovereign powers at issue here, and that the power, even though it was predicated on power to exclude in Ortiz Barraza, really included other inherent sovereign powers that the Supreme Court acknowledged in Strait with footnote 11.
Right.
So that's our point.
Let me ask you one. Go back to where we started.
Yes.
All right. Let's assume you're wrong about all of that, but i.e. that in fact the district judge applied the right standard with regard to the authority of this tribal officer. The question remains whether that gets the defendant to the exclusionary rule, i.e., is that a Fourth Amendment violation or something else?
Yes.
And if it's something else, is it enforceable at all, and if so, how?
Well, so as to the Fourth Amendment issue, we think that the tribal authority issue isn't a per se sign that the ultimate search was unreasonable, and that's
right.
What
and the district court never reached that.
It never reached that, and it should have reached that question. I mean, the district court should have actually, at the time of detention, made the finding as to whether or not that was the case. So we think that the authority issue in any case is simply one factor of many that could be considered in the overall reasonableness concept.
Can we go back to the question Judge Berzon asked, and I think I asked too?
Yeah.
Let's assume you have a violation of ICRA. Let's assume that I think you concede there are some things a tribal officer can't do on the reservation that another officer might be able to
can't
do.
Can't charge, and he can't. Okay. And can't
fair. Fair enough. So I don't want to get in a fight about what the violation is. Let's assume a tribal officer has acted in excess of his authority, but he would not have been violating the Fourth Amendment. What he does not violate the Fourth Amendment.
Yes.
You're saying the only remedy for that is a federal tort act claim against the tribal officer?
Well, I mean, there may be other remedies. There is no private cause of action against the tribe because of sovereign immunity. And obviously,
no,
Bressy.
I don't understand your federal tort claims argument. There isn't one.
Well, so if there is a 638 contract,
we're assuming there isn't one. If there were one, we wouldn't be having this whole problem.
We don't know because
he'd be a federal officer.
We certainly don't know. I mean, we don't know.
Well, if we don't know, then maybe we should know because we don't need to be here if he's a federal officer.
He was not a federal officer.
All right,
so he wasn't
authorized by the federal government to do what he did.
It isn't part of the record that this officer was acting under some
I'm not sure why you're
638 contract, which would make him liable under the federal tort claims.
But
that's
we don't have a separate issue.
We don't need to deal with that.
I'm not sure why you're sort of scared of saying no. There may not be a remedy, just like there may not be a remedy.
There may not be a remedy
under state law for violations of state authority.
There very well may not be a private remedy for an outrageous Fourth Amendment search under these conditions. But there's always the remedy of the Fourth Amendment, now you've changed my hypothetical.
I just want to be clear.
That's what we do.
We got a violation of federal law.
Yes.
That doesn't violate the Fourth Amendment. And your position is, I think, at the end of the day, well, you don't get the evidence excluded and there's probably no remedy for it.
Our position is we're dealing with the evidence that was gathered in that case, and the issue in this case, the sole issue, is not sort of what remedy the defendant has for an outrageous search. It's whether the evidence can be used in this case. It can be used in this case because the search was otherwise reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
And just one last point, and then you're way over your time, although I told you that you could do that. I assume you would agree that if we were to reverse what the district court did, we then go back and start with stage one, which is whether there was a Fourth Amendment violation. No one ever actually decided whether if this were an otherwise authorized person, this would be a valid, right?
It needs to be remanded so that the court can make that determination.
All right. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Eric Hinkle, and I'm appearing on behalf of Mr. Cooley. Judge Waters' decision in this case was both legally and factually correct, and it should be affirmed.
So cite for me any case in which we've applied the exclusionary rule in the absence of a Fourth Amendment violation where there was only an ICRA violation.
Can I just interrupt for a minute? Is there an ICRA violation if it's not a Fourth Amendment violation?
Is there an ICRA? There is an ICRA violation, yes.
Because
ICRA says that applies the prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures to the tribe.
So let's stop for a second. I phrased this incorrectly.
Okay.
Let's assume that the tribal officer did not have the authority to conduct the search, but that had he been a federal officer or a state officer, the search would not have violated. He could have done so, and the search would not have violated the Fourth Amendment under any circumstance. Is there any case where we've suppressed the fruits of a search solely because the tribal officer exceeded his authority?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor, but that is not what the government is arguing here.
Well, but it's what I'm asking, because here's the problem. The district judge, maybe quite correctly, said the officer exceeded the scope of his authority because of the interplay between federal Indian law and and other law. But the district judge never said the officer violated the Fourth Amendment. And so my question is, under that circumstance, what case tells us we can exclude the evidence?
The fact that it was still an unreasonable seizure.
I'm asking you about a case. I'm asking you, is there any...
And I'm not aware of any Ninth Circuit.
But you're saying it's unreasonable because you didn't have authority. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. That's
you're also saying, or you will say if you have to go back to the district court, that it was unreasonable anyway.
Yes.
But let's leave that aside for now.
Right. Okay.
What about the Virginia versus Morris and that line of authority with regards to, which isn't anywhere in the briefs, but which basically says that the fact that, for example, you're violating state law when you arrest somebody is no never mind with regard to the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, those are the line of cases cited by the government about the lack of authority.
But they're a little different, and I don't know that they ever cited Virginia versus Morris, but they have to do with whether a violation of state law, and it's not really about the authority of the officer, but rather the fact, well, in a way it is, because state law said you couldn't arrest somebody for this and for what they arrested him for. And the Supreme Court said, well, that's no never mind. The question is whether it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment to arrest him for that, and it isn't.
Right. And in that case sounds similar to the cases relied upon by the government here, which is these cases where there is a Becerra Garcia, for example, and the First Circuit decision, U.S. v. Ryan, that they filed their supplemental authority about last week. In both of those cases, you had a federal actor. In Becerra Garcia, the court expressly found that the tribal rangers in that case were acting at the direction of the U.S. Border Patrol. And so they found state action in that case. In Ryan, it was a federal national park officer who it was not disputed in that case that he had the authority to detain and investigate.
But not off the park.
No, in Ryan, if you read Ryan, he did. There was a statute that expressly gave them.
But I want to get back to the question that both of us have been trying to ask and make it a state law. Let's have a state law that says constables may only arrest people for misdemeanors. And the constable arrests somebody for a felony and then conducts a search. Would we suppress the fruits of that search because he violated state law?
If you found that it was unreasonable, yes.
Well,
just solely because it violated state law, not because it violated the Fourth Amendment. Or put it differently, is it unreasonable simply because it violates state law? Virginia versus Moore seems to say no.
I don't believe not simply because of the violation of state law, no.
So at the end of the day here, don't we have to find an unreasonable seizure or in search, which is to say a Fourth Amendment violation, before we can suppress?
Yeah, but that's where Bressy comes in. If ultimately a stop by a tribal officer of a non-Indian on a state highway, if all you needed to justify that stop was the objectively reasonable suspicion that we traditionally apply, that's what the court in Bressy would have said. But instead, it applied this obviousness standard. And articulated that rule when
Bressy was a funny context because you didn't have this non-enforceability problem because if he wasn't a federal officer, as a tribal officer, he was a state officer, right? And so they were just trying to figure out whether he was operating under tribal authority or under state authority, and he ultimately said, well, he had to be operating under state authority because he couldn't operate under tribal authority.
But see, the state certification issue in Bressy, I think, is what makes it so telling and instructive in this case. Because in that case, this court had to articulate and discuss this line and determine, it had to look at the sequence of events to determine which actions the officers were authorized to take under purely tribal law. And ultimately, they had to do that in order to determine whether Bressy had stated a viable 1983
claim. It's very informative on the substantive standard, but it isn't very informative on the remedy standard.
See?
Right.
It seems to me that what Bressy implies is that it's the Fourth Amendment standard that controls the Section 1983 claim, right?
I don't think Bressy necessarily...
Well, see, it's a 1983 claim.
Right.
And the question is, can you make a 1983 claim? And the court says, well, you can in this case because they were operating under color of state law.
Right.
And Bressy says, once you do that, then we look under 1983 to see whether there's a constitutional violation.
Right.
And so I'm not sure how Bressy helps you when we don't have a constitutional violation.
Bressy helps because, again, if the if a tribal officer had the authority to detain and transport based upon reasonable suspicion, they would have stated, Bressy would have stated that, but they didn't.
I mean, you understand what's bothering at least
two of us. I do.
Right? It's not where I at least am willing to assume that the district judge, I mean, unlike what the government says, was quite right about this obviousness standard applying here, and that Bressy and that the roadblock part of Bressy is a you know, sort of artifact, but it isn't the substantive standard. You're right. Let's assume that you're right about the substantive standard,
okay,
and that the district judge was right about the substantive standard. I understand that the government has not, until now, and not even that much now, really joined issue on the question of then what. But then what?
Well, and that's important because the government has not argued that the exclusionary rule doesn't apply.
Well, the government had look. The district court suppressed in this case solely on the basis of what it thought was an excess of authority issue, right?
Right.
What if the district court was right? You're saying the government has waived a Fourth Amendment argument? It certainly made one below, and the district court declined to get to it.
It didn't. The government has not argued that the district court erred because it applied the exclusionary rule. That they're arguing that the fact that a particular officer may lack authority does not amount to a per se unreasonable seizure.
Well, it's really the same argument,
no,
though, isn't it?
Because it goes to the reasonableness of the detention.
Yeah, but your argument is that reasonableness is measured against something other than the Fourth Amendment. And the government's argument throughout has been that reasonableness is measured against the Fourth Amendment standard.
No, I think what I'm arguing is that an unreasonable detention is what this court says in this context, is what this court said it was in Bressy, which is a detention for something other than an obvious violation of state or federal law. That's unreasonable.
Well, see, but I put Bressy aside because I don't think it gets you where you need to go. I just want to understand your position.
Mm-hmm.
Your position is that we can have an unreasonable detention that requires suppression of resulting evidence that's seized, and that unreasonable is measured against the authority of the officer to engage in the detention, not the traditional Fourth Amendment standard.
No, that's not my position, I don't think, technically.
Well, no, it has to be your position. What else could be your position?
Well, I guess I didn't quite understand exactly what you were getting
at. You're basically feeding the lack of authority into the reasonableness standard.
Yeah. Yes,
right.
That's right.
Right.
Definitely.
There are two questions about that. One is, given Ryan and Virginia versus Moore, is there any authority for that? Is in that regard, does it matter that this is that the rule that's being enforced here is sort of a, you know, it's a quasi-jurisdictional rule it's a federal rule, first of all. It's not state law as in Morris, and it's a federal rule that has, you know, some depth in terms of separating out federal and tribal jurisdiction, so maybe it's an important enough rule that it ought to be feeding into the – I mean, you're not really explaining to us with an argument of principle why this particular kind of lack of authority should be feeding into the Fourth Amendment when we know that others don't.
Well, I think, Your Honor, it goes to what you said. Then there, if the evidence of this detention – is not suppressed and excluded from trial, then there is literally no remedy for the violation.
But the exclusionary rule, the Supreme Court tells us, is an extraordinary remedy to be imposed for constitutional violations. You're, in effect, asking us to impose it for a statutory violation.
There's no statute involved in here.
Well, if there's no statute, then it's even worse.
Well, but is the federal Indian law underlying this of constitutional dimension, essentially, i.e., the fact that tribes, that the division of authority between the federal government and Indians with regard to the authority over non-Indians, is that, you know, of sufficient and special authority somehow?
The Fourth Amendment doesn't strictly apply because we're dealing with ICRA.
Well, I understand that, yeah. But feeding it into ICRA, the ICRA parallel to the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I mean, ICRA issues are often analyzed through the traditional Fourth Amendment lens of reasonableness. And that's what was done here. It's just what is reasonable versus what is unreasonable.
Look, let's suppose somebody is driving across the state line in New Jersey, and a New Jersey state parole officer follows him into Delaware. I don't know if Delaware and New Jersey they meet each other. I think they do. And
New Jersey natives.
and stops him in Delaware. Is that a Fourth Amendment violation?
Well, that sort of goes to State v. Erickson, which is a Washington Supreme Court case from 2011, which is different from Schmuck. But that was sort of the issue. It was the reverse there, where you had a tribal officer chasing a non-Indian from on the reservation off the reservation. And ultimately, I don't believe they specifically discussed the exclusionary rule within the context of that case, but they reversed a lower court's denial of a motion to suppress in that case.
But let me try this a little differently. ICRA itself, as it says, you know, it's got an exclusionary rule in it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is the exclusionary rule in ICRA limited to Fourth Amendment violations?
No, it's.
But the rest of the language of that section seems to say what we want to do is apply the Fourth Amendment on Indian reservations.
Where is the exclusionary rule in ICRA?
The exclusionary rule says that we exclude the fruits of an unreasonable search or seizure.
Where is that?
No, it doesn't say that in ICRA. I thought we were talking about just what does the exclusionary rule say.
Right. So it doesn't say that in ICRA.
Right, but we have but to the extent we're going to exclude stuff under ICRA, since you think there's an exclusionary rule under ICRA, why does it go broader than the language of 1302, which talks about, which has really a Fourth Amendment standard? Why would we read an exclusionary rule into ICRA broader than the language of 1302?
Well, the exclusionary rule, we apply the exclusionary rule to the exact same language that we find in the Fourth Amendment.
I understand your argument to be that we're not going beyond ICRA. We are saying that it's an unreasonable search and seizure for somebody who doesn't have the authority to search you to search you.
That's not technically what I'm arguing, because Bressy says they have the authority, but the authority is only there
without meeting the Bressy standard.
Right.
If somebody who doesn't have the authority under the Bressy standard to keep you there, keeps you there and investigates, doesn't just detain you, then you were saying that that's unreasonable.
Yes, that's what Judge Waters held.
So that's your hook.
Yes.
And the question is, how do you get there? And where does that come from? There's something somewhat satisfying about it. I mean, how could it be reasonable for if I decided to stop this guy in the street and search him? Presumably, it would be unreasonable because I don't have any authority to do it. That's your basic argument.
This is
just a nobody who's doing
it. It's not Fourth Amendment unreasonable. It's just unreasonable.
It's Fourth Amendment unreasonable.
The lack of authority comes from the unreasonableness of the stop. I think there's two different types of lack of authority. You have the pure lack of authority when somebody is outside of their territorial jurisdiction in a place where they cannot act. But then you have the other scenario where they have authority within where they're at, but they exceed that authority, so they lack.
But your basic argument, as I understand it, is that it is unreasonable for somebody who has no authority to search and seize you to search and seize you. That's an unreasonable search.
Unless there's an Bressy tells us that they can't. Yeah, that's my argument. Yes.
Right. Even though if this person had been a state or federal officer, we would then only analyze the search under the Fourth Amendment.
That's right.
Substantively, as opposed to in terms of who's doing it.
Yes.
Now, that's our basic problem, is what is the authority for the position that if the wrong person searches you, you have an unreasonable search under the Fourth Amendment and therefore under ICRA?
And again, that is not the issue raised by the government's appeal here.
Why?
Because they're not arguing that the exclusionary rule does not apply. They've never said that. They've never argued it.
It's about the substantive Fourth Amendment violation. I understand that they're arguing a bunch of other things which are probably wrong. But you think they're not arguing that a person without authority searching you is not a Fourth Amendment violation?
They're saying it doesn't amount to a per se Fourth Amendment violation. I think that's what they're arguing. Now
I think you're correct in saying their argument doesn't squarely meet this. But I do think they're arguing that the judge erred because the search didn't violate the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah. If you set aside the obviousness standard and you just want to analyze this based upon reasonable suspicion, yeah, I think that's what they're arguing.
Let me just ask you one last question before you go home, because you're now over your overtime. You also agree, I assume, that there would be a remand if we didn't agree with this? And right.
Didn't agree with the...
With this little piece that we're worried about, i.e. how does the lack of authority feed into the Fourth Amendment violation? And I understand you think we shouldn't be reaching that because the government really isn't arguing that. I understand that much. And you know, I think that's arguable. But nobody has ever decided substantively whether this was, if this person had authority, was this a valid search?
Substantively? I disagree. Judge Waters decided it substantively because she found that it was an unreasonable seizure.
Suppose we thought it didn't matter who this person was. Suppose we thought that we should be analyzed the same as if he were a state officer or a federal officer. You would still, I assume, argue vigorously that there was this went beyond the substance of a valid detention and search.
If the reasonable suspicion standard applied?
Reasonable suspicion.
The standard applied. The standard that would
slash
apply
probable cause at some point.
No,
right.
I think you should still affirm Judge Waters because the record is clear that.
Well, I'm asking you. So you think we should do that and not send it back?
As an alternative. As a separate grounds for affirming.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Our point with Bressy is that the context really does matter. The obviousness standard is related to the Edmund decision and the limitations on using.
I always disagree with you. Do you win or lose?
We win in the sense that this case needs to be remanded so that the court can consider the reasonableness.
If we disagree with you about the reach of Bressy, do you win or lose?
We still win.
Applied the right substantive standard.
We still win because number one, the authority issue itself is not determinative. As Judge Hurwitz was discussing, the issue becomes then: was this violation of ICRA, which is a statute, was it reasonable under the meaning of the Fourth Amendment, as of course cases have interpreted it?
Authority never matters?
No, authority can be factored in to the reasonableness equation, right? It is a factor to be considered. And Ford actually, in the Ford case that we cited, it actually discusses that a little bit. It says, look, just because he's 10 feet outside of the reservation or the park in that case doesn't make it per se unreasonable. Now, it may be a factor to be considered. Let's say the tribal officer here drives 150 miles away to another town and arrests somebody. In that case, the officer's authority would certainly be a factor for you to consider
even if the Fourth Amendment were otherwise violated?
Not otherwise satisfied?
Even if the Fourth Amendment were otherwise satisfied, I think that could be factored into the reasonableness equation. And I don't think the case law forecloses that. What Becerra Garcia says is it's not a per se Fourth Amendment violation. But to get to your question, Judge Hurwitz, I don't think it's difficult for us to make the argument that If ICRA is reviewed under the Fourth Amendment case law and standards, and these are all judge-made standards, exclusion being primary among them, that they come in a package and apply to ICRA. That is, an unreasonable search under ICRA, a statute, is remedied by the package that this court...
I guess I was asking a slightly different question, which is 1302 in ICRA talks about constitutional rights. And so we might well say that a violation of 1302 in ICRA requires exclusion because it matches up with the Constitution.
Right.
But they're not all other violations of ICRA, if you will, authority violations require exclusion. And I was trying to figure out where the line is.
And that would be the line because ICRA isn't the entire Bill of Rights package. The thing about ICRA is it contains some of the Bill of Rights. You know, you don't have a right to counsel, for instance, but you do have a right to be apprised of your charge and arraigned on a charge. So the Fourth Amendment package comes with ICRA. That's essentially what the court said in Becerra-Garcia, and that means that that exclusion remedy applies, but it applies under the same circumstances. That is reasonableness. And if you want to consider authority, it's only one factor to be considered in this larger reasonableness package, and Bressy did not reach that question.
Right.
Bressy
You're
did
up,
not.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. It's an interesting and difficult case. You were both helpful. United States versus Cooley is submitted. And just for planning purposes, after the next case, we'll take a short break.